I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there. Hello, and welcome to the Mark Groves podcast. I'm so excited to share with you this conversation that I had with one of my favorite spiritual teachers, Gangaji. And I found her work at a really important time in my life, as in it came into my world right when I needed it. And you know how that happens, and perhaps that's happened with this podcast for you, or you've shared this podcast with other people, or someone hands you a book or sends you a quote or sends you words or thoughts or whatever that they think might be helpful. And it has this resonance with it, that this truth that says, I got to keep following this. I got to dive deep. And this has happened with any sort of teacher or book or thing that I get sent when my heart is ready. And, you know, as they say, when the student is ready, the teacher arrives, the teacher that we need for that moment. And that's why I think things like podcasts are so powerful, because I can bring on here people that have really resonated for me that, if not through me, you might not have found. And that means a lot for me, that I can be a conduit to people learning from other people, and us all, you know, as Ram Dass says, we're all just walking each other home. And a dear friend of mine sent me her podcast, which is excerpts and also recordings of just her teachings. And her teachings just met me perfectly in the place I was in. It was right after Kylie and I broke up. And it then brought me on a trail of eventually going to one of her retreats, which was a truly profound experience. And so I'm really pumped that you get to hear the energetics of how her words feel in your body, because that's how they feel for me. And hopefully that's true for you. And yeah, so before we get kicking into this episode, one way that you can really support the podcast is by subscribing to it wherever you listen to it, sharing it, and going and giving it a 5-star review and a written review. That helps it get into more people's ears. And so we can all continue to awaken and take responsibility for our lives and how we love and how we relate and how we walk our path on this planet. And so let's do this. Without further ado, here's Gangaji. So I'm so grateful that you've taken the time to be on the podcast to share your wisdom with all the people who follow this podcast. And you've had such a profound impact on my life, your words. I found you in the depths of a breakup, maybe like a week after I went through a breakup. And a friend of mine sent me your podcast, and I was struck by the words, silence is who you are. you know, at first I was like, what does that mean? But there's like a truth to it that my bones were like, yes, yes. And I know I had been feeling called to sort of enter my own form of Vipassana in that moment. So first off, welcome and thank you for that was a profound beginning to a journey deep within and then meeting you in Hawaii. So, and now we're worlds apart from that time. So thank you.
Oh, I'm really, really happy to see you again, meet you again.
Yeah, in Hawaii, it was like right at the beginning. It was right before all the sort of things unfolded. So our world is certainly in a different place. And I found like a lot of even that conversation about silence is who you are, a lot of it being preparation, you know, to go through what we're going through. And I was wondering if you could sort of speak to that, like, to how that relates and even what you mean by that. Because I think so many of us are afraid of silence. Sorry, please.
That's right. And we've been punished with silence in the past. Yeah. You know, we've been told to be quiet and don't speak out of turn. And so we have, like with almost every word in our language, we have polluted the purity of the word. And so first we have to get through that and to recognize, what does it mean when someone is saying, just be silent, just be still? It's actually just come home, just rest in yourself for a moment. And as we know, if we are readers of history in any degree, there are always very intense things that are subject to happen in any age. And we're going through one of those now. I mean, besides the war that's going on all over the planet and the starvation, there's this disease, this pandemic. And it was shocking. It is shocking to people to have their lives just turned in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And the shock can serve, of course, because shocks are here in our lives in varying degrees. And that shock can serve to actually throw our attention back to the spaciousness that the word silence is pointing to the fullness, the emptiness, the presence, and ultimately the consciousness of oneself. As we get, especially as human beings, and maybe even as searching human beings, we get so attuned to our sensory world, our outside world, what others are impacting in our world, that we just overlook this free, spacious, peaceful, fulfilled, I think fulfilled is really the word, presence that is here. And so the shock can serve for that. And certainly the, I know it's opening up now, but the way we didn't have the ability to socialize with one another in the same way, which is beautiful. We are social animals and we want to do that. And beautiful interactions come from that. And we share with people in verbal ways and limbic ways. But it did throw us back into finding, what is it we want? What is always here? And that's the crux of my teacher's teaching. What is always here? What doesn't come and go? When it's harmonious times, when it's catastrophic times, what is still here? So that's what I mean when I use the word silence.
Well, that idea of what is always here, you know, I remember someone speaking to you and sharing about how they'd gotten sober and they'd stopped all the things and that they were still sort of trying to find, you know, what you can't put your finger on, the sort of mystical thing. And you said to them, get more sober. And at the time that was relevant to me sitting and watching because I'd quit drinking. I'd quit really any what I thought I'd quit all the things I could quit. And when you said that, I was thrown to a loop of like, oh yeah, get sober from everything that pulls you away from now.
Yes. Yes. Get sober from your unnecessary suffering. We get drunk on our unnecessary suffering. Sometimes we get high on it, but we always crash with it. And mm-hmm. so the call to sobriety at any level is the same call to silence. And we're afraid of sobriety. We think, and silence, we think they will be dull or dead or nothing will happen. We don't trust ourselves to be simply who we are.
It seems like technology has really continued to facilitate that. Like, obviously, technology can be beautiful. It can facilitate these conversations from different places in the world. But like anything that can bring us joy and bring us dopamine hits, it seems to have made it so, like, even in silence, I don't know that young people, although I'd say all people who have phones, that's an unfair statement of like, we don't really stand a chance against a lot of the technology that's constantly at us, all the research that's like, how do I get more of your attention? And we don't really know boredom anymore. I'm curious what you think about that.
I think that's really a good point. I mean, the whole point of being tuned in or linked in all the time is so that there's no boredom. There's nothing, there's very little you have to do to be stimulated from the outside. And as you say, it's all built on that. So, you know, there are plenty of jokes about it. People running into trees or running into cars, which is no big joke, but it's true. Everywhere I go, I just see people, you know, linked into their screen. I mean, sitting in the park, the screen. And so that is, I think, a generational thing and an essential thing. And something will happen to shake that up in some way, or we will just become even more extensions of our machines. Mm. But I think everyone has that issue, and that's part of what the social structure serves, is a way that we aren't bored, is a way that we're stimulated. And, you know, there's a very good part to that, because our brains like stimulation. They grow, they make connections, and that's beautiful. But our brains also like to rest, and we forget that. And nobody's going to remember it for us. We have to take responsibility for that. And so and that's what you do when you get sober. You actually don't wait for somebody to offer you whatever the substance is that may be keeping you suffering, ultimately suffering. You take responsibility for that. Whoever offers you anything, you take responsibility for this spaciousness of being. And even those words, you know, I'm aware that it can sound kind of bleak or dull or boring, but it's not. And you don't know that until you discover that. It's like meeting death. Sounds like morbid and horrible. And why would I do that? I just have to keep escaping death. But in your willingness just to turn and open, well, death is what we sense in being bored or in stopping. We feel like we will die because in a real sense, we are conditioned to move and to seek stimulus because that's our survival drive. But when you're willing to recognize that and you're willing in a space of safety, I'm not suggesting you do that with bombs falling all around you or some natural event that is threatening you, but in a space in your house or in nature, or just to take a few moments and experiment with what does it really mean to me to be silent, to be still, to stop, to open, to there not being a next moment, to stop the trajectory of throwing oneself in the future and just be here. It's so simple. And that's what keeps it out of our reach, because we are programmed and conditioned to be complicated. And then, as you say, the devices accentuate that complication, the noise.
What do you think it is that, you know, like when we think about stopping, that aversion to, I guess it's sort of the death of the hustle. It's the death of the continued movement. And it seems to be like, I remember when you first sort of invited that space to stillness, you also followed up with a question like, what are you afraid you'll find there? And immediately I was struck with just more of myself. And yeah, and then I just had a lot of grief, but like a good grief, you know, of like, I've missed me.
Yes, you've been searching for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all the stimulus is. Of course, it's physically translated as survival. Even if we're searching for the perfect mate, it's some kind of survival, because then I'll be happy. And it's about me always, but it's me in some future rather than me just in this moment with whatever is going on. Misery, bliss, whatever, just to be still in that. It's your nature. It may not be second nature. What is second nature is our thrust outward and to seek the stimulation. And I'm not making that wrong in any way. I think that we are made for that. And it can be beautiful. It's wonderful. And it can be treacherous and addictive. And then misery, because you miss yourself. Even if you don't know you miss yourself, you do. You're trying to fill yourself so you can find yourself, but you are always right here.
The simplicity of that is almost confronting. You know, it's like, it's so simple, and yet we're reading books and on this journey, and again, books are great and personal growth is great and all that stuff. And I often think like, what you're ultimately inviting is to just actually let ourselves arrive, like let ourselves be.
Yes. It's all of our books are stimulating that sense of, yes, I want that. I want to be free. I want to be full. I want to be true. But it's somehow putting it in the future. And if I do this, I will get there. Even books that are pointing you back to the present. There's a way that our mind translates that is, oh, I have to do this. I mean, even what I'm saying here, just take a moment and be still. Okay, I've got to take a moment and be still. That's a future action. But in reality, it's already here. It's the willingness to stop creating anything. Mm. We are. I know in my generation, create your reality was a really big deal. And the point of that was to recognize how we add negativity to reality and then we suffer. And so it was very valid, but it became a whole movement to create your life or to create life itself or to create God. And of course, it just became an ego trip. You know, I will do this. I will be God. And so that's very tempting and can be scintillating, but the invitation to not create anything, to see what is here before your creation, and then during whatever is created, whoever you think creates it, and after that creation dies, because if it's born, it will die. And that's the really good news. We think sobriety is bad news, you know. It doesn't sound like fun if we're really into the stimulation. But the news is, and it's what you're reporting, is it's not what it's thought to be. It's much bigger and deeper, and it is fulfilling.
It seems to be that fear of, at least I'll speak for myself, that when I was confronted with silence, confronted with, almost thrust into it because of grief, you know, like the rooting nature of grief, of loss, that I really couldn't run from it. The grief was coming to get me and it was going to hold me still. And in the experience of being in that stillness, I then confronted death in a way that I never had. They felt very interlinked. Like I felt an immense amount of grief about not being present in myself. But I also started to process what it means to be a mortal being. And that, maybe that's due to age too, you know, that I turned 40 and, you know, there was I'm curious what your thoughts are about our aversion to even thinking about our mortality, or and what does that cause for us, you know, in our lives? Where do we struggle because of the suffering of not wanting to just accept mortality?
Oh, well, you know, what a meditation those very questions are. If everyone would just ask themselves those questions, what is the cost of my fear of we know about mortality, we see it all around
right.
us, but we somehow think we're the exception. You know?
Right.
We can't think that way. And it's possibly just the way our brains are wired to keep us reaching for immortality. Yes, so then the willingness to be silenced is the willingness not to be who you think you are, not to get what you think you need, not to have what you think you have. There's a kind of nakedness in that. And yes, it can be fearsome. I felt great fear when my teacher told me, just be still. And I tried to sort of imitate being still. You know, I got into a meditative posture and he said, no, no, that's too much. Just really be still. And I felt a terror arise in me. I can see now, maybe it was the terror I would die. I was just, it felt like to me, if I was still, I would lose everything I had been building all those years of improving myself, that I would somehow regress back, which is kind of death. So I think it takes different forms for different people, but it is finally, yes, meeting the reality that everything that is born dies, and the deeper reality that what is always here is here now and always. And so in that, there's a capacity as an individual, as a human being, as a brain, to actually come back rather than reaching, which is our nature. And we have reached all over the planet. We've conquered the planet. And it's time to come back.
Yeah.
For our planet's life, for the other species, and for each other, to come back to what doesn't need any acquisition for its fulfillment. But it may initially feel, as you were saying, threatening. It's like, whoa, but if I go back, I'm subject to death. And somehow we like the right. trance of not feeling subject
right.
to death. But it is a trance. And so the willingness to have the trance broken. So we can say sobriety, but it's also maturity in the best sense. It's really you're growing up, and in that you're recognizing what is ageless, what is truly ageless. It certainly doesn't have anything to do with you as an individual, but the recognition of this presence of consciousness, that you as an individual in your own capacity for awareness can recognize as your own source. So as is, it's the source of every tree and every animal and everybody. So this is transcendent realization, but recognized with a very simple willingness to stop feeding for a moment. And I'm not saying as a practice, I'm just saying for a moment, so that you at least has the experience of the fulfillment, the presence, the sobriety, the completion. Because I remember in our conversation, you know, it you were hurting because it was like some part of you was removed. And yes, there's grief for that. If you'd lost an arm, you would be grieving that arm and you wouldn't feel like you could ever function the same way. But in the willingness to retreat back to what is here and always here, you recognize the wholeness, even if the parts are missing. And that's a significant recognition that actually gives you the strength and the courage to deepen in that realization.
It's almost like that recognition is the recognition that you've given away a part of your wholeness for relationship. And I mean, that to me, in the awareness of that, there is or has been in the past of relationship a lot of grief, knowing that my complete, you know, you complete me, a famous line from, I think, Jerry Maguire. You know, it's like we all romanticize that line. And
yeah, we believe it.
Right, right. It's almost like the loss of a relationship that completed you is, and the grief of it is not just about the loss of the relationship, but also that you have given a part of yourself away, that your wholeness, like you as a being and a consciousness, wasn't complete as it is.
That's
Am I making
right.
sense? I'm like,
yeah, it's so beautiful. That's really deep. And that's why the opportunity, I mean, grief, because there's only grief because there's love. And so you may project it all on the one you lost, which is a part of yourself you lost. But the grief itself, as you reported, is a call back to discover what is here. It's a call back to your love, because we do project ourselves and give ourselves away. I mean, we do to our country, we do to our planet, you know, where this is needed for my completion. And while that's natural as a human being, it's very destructive, finally, in realizing yourself. So you have to recognize what can be lost will be lost.
Right.
And you did recognize that. And the shock of that actually threw you more deeply into yourself. And that's really the good news of losing. And we will lose. I mean, we have to at least intellectually recognize that. We can't keep any of it.
Right.
Anything that can be objectified, even a beloved, you can't keep that because there's a separation. But you can recognize finally what is deeper than your body, because you can't keep your youth. I mean, you said we're turning 40 then. Next year, I'll be 80. So wow. It's like, wow, that was fast. it's really fast. And so you certainly look in the lifetime of the planet, it's very fast. It's birth and death. It's just a snap.
Right.
And so then how precious to recognize in this instantaneous moment, we have the capacity to actually discover this timeless expansion so that you're not separate from the cosmos.
It's almost like you in that stopping, the momentum of all the mass and the hustle culture and the you got to build this and you got to be this and you got to do this and you got to have this, that all that momentum when you just stop just keeps going and you realize, which I feel would almost be confronting, you know, because then you're like, hey, what are all these things? Like now I'm watching the world move and I'm actually now going at the pace of the circadian rhythm. Like I'm actually breathing with the planet instead of like short breaths, you know?
That's beautiful. So beautiful.
Well,
my
observation of humanity, which is really just through the lens of my own observation of myself, is that when I first started to slow down years ago, but not really come to a stop till you sort of shook me, is I was really afraid of the truths that dwelled in the stillness that I wasn't living. Like there was like a gap between who my soul was saying. When I stopped, it would say, hey, these behaviors need to stop, or this way of being needs to stop, or you're sad and you haven't let yourself be sad for 20 years because you're running from it. And because you're running from it, you're doing all this other shit. Just stop. And it seems to me like that is like when you actually stop and sit in those things and allow those truths to actually be accepted, your call to action is to integrate them or change your life, like stand for them. And you've said, I've heard you say that, like, what does your life stand for? And I think like for all of us, that call of humanity is to this integrity, to the stillness, like the stillness calls us to integrity. And I think,
that's beautiful. Integrity means wholeness, right? So then we are, We stop being this separate thing, you know, we're going to do it. It's an agenda. You recognize, whoa, I would like for, you know, global warming to be reversed. I would like for us all to live. I'd like for us all to be healthy. It's not necessary for your wholeness. So that's what I meant, I think, earlier when I said take responsibility. Sobriety is taking responsibility for your unnecessary suffering, for how you are contributing to the suffering of the planet and certainly to the suffering of other people. And it's a kind of childish contribution. So in that moment, although it was happening before, in that moment, you really grew up. You said, whoa. It's like a moment of honesty, you know, just, whoa, telling the truth. Then it's quite obvious what activities you're participating in that are not serving anything except the stimulation of the activity. It's obvious then, and you continue to grow. And that growing really is not about aging then, it's about deepening. Because Ramana was 16 when he had his awakening experience, and he had never studied. Well, he was in a religious household, but he wasn't a particularly religious kid. He liked sports, but he had a profound experience of loss. He lost his father. His father died. And that sense of loss, and I don't presume to say what he was emotionally feeling, but we know that when there are events that come and stop our lives from the way we thought they were going, there's a crack then in the universe, and the possibility is to fall into that crack, to really then be to recognize what is there. We feel like we will die if we fall into the crack, or die of grief, or be incomplete, as you were saying. But the recognition is, my God, I was making myself incomplete. I was denying myself. And we get to see the habitual forms of that, as you say. Then it's obvious, these behaviors. And certain behaviors are not honest with the truth of who you are and what you want truly for this life and for all life.
That seems to be an act of rebellion in a lot of ways. You know, like...
Oh, well, and we're sort of beautiful. All... It's true.
Well, we're all sort of participating in this play, you know, pretending we like shit we don't like, pretending we're happy when we're not, buying shit to make us feel better about those feelings. Mm-hmm. And when we actually start to say things like, I'm not happy, or I feel like there's more to life, or we experience loss, and I think there can be those micro losses, like we lose a job, or not to make it insignificant, but like not the death of a parent or a partner or whatever, a child, but that like that loss can be anything that points to the crack of who the space between who you're being and who you are. And like, you can fall into that all the time, you know, like anytime you have a feeling of like, oh, I actually have a better version of me available and I'm not living it, like fall in that crack, you know?
That's right. That crack is there. Yeah. Failure. I think you're talking about failure in a certain way. You know, we have these ideals either that we have been taught or that we have developed, and it becomes an idealism. It's just different from having ideals, which are pure and beautiful. The idealism becomes like a cult of mind. And if we tell the truth, we are failing quite often, you know, and that failure is an opening. It's like you lost your love and your object of love, your completion. You lost a part of yourself in losing that relationship. And so that's a failure. It's a major failure. And then that is the call to actually open to that, because failure is death in the most primitive sense of our minds. So if you open to failure, oh my God, I actually failed, either in losing the relationship or in losing myself in the relationship. I failed. And that is what we avoid, like dying. We avoid dying and we avoid failing because it means death.
Yeah.
But to open to it, it's like I failed. And something is just... the super ego then that says you shouldn't fail, never fail. My God, you failed. You're a wretched person. It has no ground to stand on because it's like, I failed. That's the truth.
Like it's a source of opening, not a source of criticism.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Then like, you're not resisting failing or resisting dying. It doesn't mean you want to die or you want to fail. It's natural to not want to die and to not want to fail, but you aren't resisting it. So you can tell the truth when you do fail, you know, because it's feedback. It's not, it's nothing to do with you. It's to do with some activity or behavior or force of nature. And you recognize it's like a toddler falling, you know, I mean, they may cry, but they get back up and try again. And pretty soon you learn how to walk in a way that's successful rather than just screaming about failing from falling. You know, the truism of learn from our mistakes has a deeper meaning. And learning also has a deeper meaning. It's a pulling you back into the wholeness. Integrity was the word you used. It's a beautiful word, into the integrity of your being.
I never thought of that looking at, because loss, as you were saying, exists on the human level, right? Like I lost an arm, I lost a partner, I lost a job, whatever it might be. But being able to turn towards it from on a spiritual level, you're actually gaining. Like you're actually learning, you're actually expanding. Just that shift,
right.
That simple shift is, I mean, it's life changing. That's profoundly life changing, you know? And if shame has been used as a way to keep our behavior in check or like guilt, then to actually turn towards quote unquote failures as opportunities is to rebel against that too, you know, is this act
that's
of
right.
Reclamation.
Yes. That is, I get what you say about rebellion and being a rebel. It is, and that does arise, you know, whether it's in generations or in people or in slaves, you know, it's finally there's, in the slave owner, there's the fear of the rebellion in the slaves. And in the slaves, there's this, you know, of course you want to rebel from slavery. And your recognition is there was a very subtle, emotionally fused slavery where you had given yourself away to serve some ideal. And so in losing that and then in recognizing that as you did, then there's choice. And it's a pure choice. It's not a choice like creating your reality. It's the choice of what's here and what do I truly, finally want. So yes, this rebellion I think is really necessary, essential. Otherwise, we just roll along. You know, when I met Papaji and I came back and told everyone about meeting Papaji, my family, I told my father, and most of them just like, oh, she's really gone off the deep end, you know. First of all, they were afraid I was a part of a cult. They saw I wasn't, you know, I was still a regular human being. But they weren't interested. It wasn't for them. My father liked to watch football. He didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to even hear about my trip to India. Same with other members of my family. They were like, oh, that's nice. Oh, glad you're good. But
spiritual,
you know,
awakening,
shopping.
Great. That's cool.
Yeah, that's good. Put it in your resume.
Right. Well, that almost seems like how it's perceived. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, that's great. You know, but like we have regular life to get to. And have you thought about what other people will think of you? Or, I mean, this is the face of, I've found like this. I was a pharmaceutical rep for 14 years, you know, and in an awakening that came from a previous breakup, that was the first time I ever really asked questions like, why am I here? And I read Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And that was the first time I ever even thought like, I'm more than just a human who's here to provide and get a picket fence and, you know, make enough money to be a good partner. It was like, oh, I actually might have a purpose. And that led to a journey of sort of questioning things. And once you start questioning things, no offense if you're a farmer rep listening, but I had to leave being a farmer rep. And what kept me, I'll use the word sort of imprisoned in that first part of my life, because I didn't know I was in prison. I thought I was in bliss.
Yeah.
You know, it was how everyone else was living and what I was taught, who I was taught I should be, what would get me status or celebration or arousal, you know, that it was what will other people think of me. And I find that still true today as different iterations of me want to be born and different things want to be spoken through me, that I have to keep reminding myself that, like, I keep learning this, that belonging to other people where I have to pretend to like shit they like, I get actually nothing from. I thought I did, but I don't. All I get is I get to keep the peace. And what I keep discovering is that, like, I have to continue to belong to my own heart first. And so how do we cope with that? Like, how do we cope with, seriously, feels like the momentum of human conditioning that says, stay small, don't use your voice. Spiritual awakening, the Dodgers are playing the Cubs. I don't even know if they play each other, but you know what I mean? I might have chosen two different sports, but like that like human need to put us back in a box, to shut the F up, to not. And I've gone back in the box before, you know? So, and then you realize you then have, eventually you break out because you can't help it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. You articulated so beautifully. I love it. It's really moving. And that is a dilemma. And, you know, for me, the word is vigilance. And there's a way that we can think of vigilance as some kind of hard edge thing, but I don't mean it that way. It's vigilance as surrender, because you won't get the support from society. Society operates on your staying small and being part of the workforce. So what you get support from is the evolution and the recognition that any true spiritual leader or artist or writer, you know, has to be broken away from the pack. I mean, otherwise nothing fresh is being offered. And so, yeah, it can be, I don't want to use the word lonely, because it's not lonely. It's so fulfilling, but you don't, Papaji would say to me, because I brought it up with him, that some people would come to see him and you could see they would just light up. And then as they were getting ready to leave, they would just start to reassemble their personas and to get back in life, you know. And I said, oh, this is heartbreaking. You know, why does that happen? And he just said, it's to be expected.
It's to be expected. You know? It is.
Yeah. It's just one of the realities of life and life forms.
How do we cope?
And that's the beauty of your podcast. You know, you don't know who's all listening to it. I don't think you could possibly know. But people tune in not even knowing why they're tuning in. Just like you picked up Viktor Frankl's book and you are spoken to in a way that you haven't been spoken to before. And so you may close the book and run away from it, or turn off the podcast, or you may say, whoa, this is speaking to something that is unknown to me. What is it? And in that, then you're serving. I mean, the word gets so misused. I don't like to use it, but I see that, you know, and you've made yourself available. And so people have the wherewithal to turn you on or turn you off, but that's their choice. Your choice is to be true to your heart. And that's a stellar choice. And that radiates out the capacity that we have for that. And that may be individually true to your heart. I mean, that's necessary, but then it is also collectively true, because it's a recognition of how our conditioning, our socialization, has been to conquer and power over. And that is not working anymore, hasn't worked for generations. And so you're speaking up, and I salute you. And you're a point of light then, Mark, without making that, you know, elaborate. You're a point of light, being true to the point of light that lit you. Viktor Frankl's book, or the moment in nature or being in love, whatever it is, something penetrated the machine and got to the heart.
Hmm. Thank you for those words. Penetrated the machine and got to the heart. That's what it feels like, you know, that it is mechanistic till it's not, till it's humanistic.
Yes.
And, you know, you spoke to the person experiencing some version of awareness and light, visiting, for example, Papaji, or listening to a podcast, or me sitting in your audience. And then we have sort of the choice as we leave. And I like that idea of sort of like reassemble, kind of like a transformer, you know, we're like putting back on the mask, like, oh, here's this armor, here's this. How does one, if, you know, for the person listening who's maybe just realizing what you said, this truth that I don't understand, but there's an invitation and I recognize the invitation and I don't know where to go, but like, how do I begin to sort of disassemble or like take off these things in the face of my mom or my dad or my, you know, saying like, that's great, but like, you should get a real job and you should do this and you should do that. And like, believe in this God, like this spiritual thing you've found is not Christianity or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Well, I think the strongest advice I can give about that is to really be willing to cultivate overhearing yourself, overhearing what you are saying to yourself, because finally that's where the instructions have been programmed into the machine. And so you can recognize when you are causing unnecessary suffering, and you can recognize when you're selling out to a false idea of yourself. Mm-hmm. I was speaking to a group of prisoners in a prison, in Folsom Prison once, and this question came up because it was a very moving meeting. These were beautiful guys who had done horrible things in their lives, but somehow in prison, different programs had touched them. And a couple of them were weeping. And then one of them said, whoa, you know, I can't take this out into the yard. I can't, you know, be open like this. And he was correct. It would have been dangerous to go into the yard and just be, you know, loving everybody and loving life. And so another one of the prisoners said, man, now you know the language that's spoken in the yard. You have to speak that language there. But you never have to let go of this truth, of this purity that's inside. And coming from the bowels of Folsom Prison to us who have so many choices that they don't have in day-to-day life, choices of who you associate with, how you spend your time, what your work is. I mean, we are already so free. So then overhearing yourself is where you are denying the truth of what you want in the depths of your heart. You can hear the narrative that's just been programmed. Oh, I guess I should get a regular job, or I guess I should go party. That's what they want to do. And you overhear that. And then it's like, whoa, you can hear the clang of it. And in that, there's choice again. You know, you can do that. People do that. They sell out. People sell out all the time. But you can recognize the tendency to do that for approval or to make somebody happy, or and just be willing to stop again. And it's taking responsibility for your own drunken narrative and getting sober from that narrative.
Yeah, and I think that awareness that you're inviting of the narrative, the observation of the narrative, and then the choice we make when the truth is available in comparison to, like I know before I quit drinking, it wasn't because I was waking up in the wrong places or destroying my life. And although I want to be mindful, because like even destroying my life is perceived as getting wasted and making horrible decisions, but it could literally be me choosing to continue to drink when the calling says don't. And that destruction is slow. And like my soul was saying, like, have you tried sobriety? Like, I think there's something here. And I was like, yeah, but I've got a bachelor party and then I got a wedding and then
And it's not so bad with me and I can handle it.
Right.
Yeah. And who knows who that what that is, what that call is. For the next person, it may be it's fine, you know. I know when it came for me, I couldn't use any substances, and I had gained a lot of support from the substances
me
I
too.
Used.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was just a point where it would be untrue to myself to continue in something that had served me, but to continue it when it wasn't serving me. It was just changing my state. And if you're really at peace with yourself, you don't need to change your state. You may change your state because you like it and you're at peace with yourself, but that wasn't true for me. It was like, and sounds like for you, that it was really not the right thing for you. So everyone has that capacity. It sometimes needs to be developed, and that means supported and listened to enough that it has the strength to actually be clear when something is finished or something shouldn't get started. And it is clear then. It's no mind. You don't even need to think about it. It's just, oh, yes, that's it. That's over.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not to say that there aren't things that I do that, like, I still have my chocolate habit.
I was just going to say sugar. For me, it's like a gummy candy is like,
yeah.
I got to get so more sober from gummy bears.
Yeah.
That's what I...
And then, because then, yeah, you have as with any addiction, there's a whole physiology that's supporting that. It's not just a thought, oh, I would like this. It's like, oh, I have to have this. And so I'm not saying this as a formula because it may not be true for other people. I mean, I think, I don't know if it was Rumi or Hafiz, but one of them was drunk all the time. You know, it's fine if it is.
I think Alan Watts was an alcoholic too. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to, it's telling the truth. And you don't know what that truth is until you're open to telling the truth.
Yeah. You know, that as I found sobriety in different ways, I started to see that something that was previously, as you said, sort of a gateway to my totality or the experience of it, started to pull me away from it because I had integrated or found it. And it always makes me think of a line I remember hearing from Ram Dass, where he was saying that he was talking to his teacher, I think Maharaji was his name. And Maharaji was asking why he did LSD all the time. And he said, because I get to sit with God. And Maharaji said, well, why don't you just become him? And I thought that was very clever, you know, and thinking like what we think we get from the thing is actually always available to us. And that's what you're reminding us of is like fall back, which is such a different than the, like the forward motion, get more, create more.
And that's it. It's an absolute difference. It's counterintuitive that way to fall back, you know, because of fear of death or loss or failure, whatever it may be. Non-advancement. And that's why it's so surprising, I think. You know, it's like, oh, what a surprise. Everything is here. Fulfillment is here.
Fulfillment is here. I think that's such a beautiful invitation for you, the listener, to be able to just recognize that everything you're seeking, everything you're after, it is already here. If you just take the moment to realize it, to accept it. I don't even, it's like a realization, but it's like an actual, what you're saying, to die into it.
Yes, that's the truth.
Is there any, so thank you for your time and for your heart and for the work that you do.
Mark, it's beautiful being with you. Really, I'm very grateful for you and for your podcast and your listeners, and it's just natural that we connect.
Yeah, that partner who I was mourning, we went on that journey of separation and stayed separated in the way that we stayed whole, or integrated it, and then came back together as two separate people. And so we had, we were... Yeah, you were such a profound part of that journey. I shared a lot of what I learned in Hawaii and also from your podcast with her. And we both have had many discussions due to those words that you've shared with us. And it's amazing, you know, when I look back at the grief that brought me to the moment to be able to hear your words when I needed them, mm-hmm. To now be in a relationship where there is liberation, you know, and separation, and where normal, you know, where I'll often say, you know, like, if your relationship is a prison, it's not a good one, you know, where you don't feel like you can leave, and that's, you're not celebrated in who you are. And that's not romantic for people, you know, like to hear, oh, well, I don't, you know, if my partner and I, our relationship ended, I would be very sad, but I would still be whole.
Huh.
We were like, yeah, that's it. Disney doesn't share that shit, you know?
That's right. It's not Disney World. That's the truth. So well, that you. Is such good news. I'm so happy. It's the promise fulfilled, you know? And then, yes, the whole universe is in flux then. And we can wait and see what happens when we're actually true to ourselves. Be surprised.
That's how the world changes, you know, that when we step out, as you've invited us to do, that stopping. You know, I was so captured by those words when I first heard them from you of like, stop searching, stop all the things and just... like, get rid of your tools, get rid of all the things, and just be. It's so simple.
Yes. It's, and that, the capacity for that is present in anyone who is inclined toward it.
Do you have any final things that you'd love to share with the audience?
I think the final is yet to come.
I love it. Well, thank you again for your time. In your heart and your mission.
Oh, Mark.
That you chose to leave the Sunday night footballs in the past so that you could share with us. And I'm so grateful to be a student.
Oh, Mark, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here with you, really. Beautiful.
Where can people find more of you? I'll make sure I put all the links in the show notes. But yeah, where can
great. The
you?
Best is my website, which is ganjaji.org. That's where I go if I want to find out where I'm supposed to be and what's happening. I mean, there are a lot of Zoom meetings that are happening. There's a monthly meeting, and then I do have retreats that. Small retreats and then bigger retreats that happen through Zoom. And I've been really happy that technology has really supported the teaching and the invitation.
Your retreat was life-changing for me. So anyone listening, if you are feeling the call and resonance with Gangaji's words, please go sign up and be taught or be a student in any way possible. So thank you again, Gangaji.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. So beautiful.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If this episode resonated with you, one of the best ways to support the show is to go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any more. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or share the episode with your community on Instagram or whatever social place you like to hang out. This helps get it into more people's ears, and I'm so grateful for your support always. Thanks again for tuning in. Much love.